Admit it, I gave up on the notion of homemade French fries years ago. But after talking to Russ Parsons, I'm, well, maybe willing to give it another try. Parsons is the author of How to Read a French Fry and other intriguing tales of kitchen science. He told me homemade fries don't have to be pale and droopy. The secret's in the science of cooking with oil.
You have to start with the right potato. The potato has to be, first of all, it has to be a russet potato, a baking potato, but then it also has to be a potato of a certain specific gravity. It needs to have been dried out enough that it'll cook up really fluffy and crisp. And then you get into the entire question of the oil. And that's what I really find fascinating, and actually has more application for the home cook, because while frying French fries is really difficult at home, you know, it takes two cookings and all of that, there are other kinds of frying that people do regularly, and that there's even more that they could do. It's very easy, although I think a lot of times people have bad experiences the first time, and so they kind of drop out.
When you talk about frying food, when you talk specifically a French fry, does it matter, first of all, what kind of oil you use?
The kind of oil you use matters less than how old the oil is. There are different oils. There's a general, generic vegetable oil, which could come from a number of things. There's peanut oil. They heat to different ultimate temperatures. You know, when they smoke at different temperatures.
Right.
But not dramatically. Not enough, I think, that it makes that big a difference to a home cook.
But what does matter, you're suggesting, is how old the oil is. Well, I guess maybe how many times it's been used?
Right. And it's one of those things, I think, that with the first batch, people get disappointed because it doesn't look as good as it should. My advice is, there's two possibilities. You have two alternatives. One of them is to do what I do, and that is put that first batch on the bottom of the platter and then cover it up with the stuff that looks better by the time it gets to... You know, by the time the people get down to the bottom layer, they're happy anyway. The other thing that you can do, and I also do this, is I keep a bottle of oil in the refrigerator that's been used. And if you add just as much as like a tablespoon of oil that's been fried in before to fresh oil, to a cup of fresh oil, to every cup of fresh oil, it'll fry well.
Now, what's going on here? When the oil is brand new, when you put it in there, you heat it up, why is it not as good to cook in as it will be in, well, I suppose 10 minutes from now?
Yeah, even shorter possibly. Most of the things that we fry are made up mainly of water. And when they're heated, the water comes to the surface and it doesn't allow the oil to penetrate and come in contact with the food. As the oil changes through cooking, the oil can come in contact with the food and it cooks better.
But there is a limit to this. You've got a kind of perfect time that can go on, I suppose, for quite a while. But then at the end, what signs are there that you've reached the useful life limit of that batch of oil?
Well, there are a couple signs. One of them is it'll smell bad. there's a kind of fishy odor to oil, an acridity to oil that is over its shall we say, sell-by date.
So that's why the French fries taste like they've been mixed in with the fillet of fish?
Exactly. You know, if you're at McDonald's, maybe they were. I don't know. But that's one possible reason. That's, you know, at home, that's what you would find. The other possibility, the other thing that you should look for is you can actually tell by the size of the bubbles. When you add food to the oil, the oil becomes less sticky as the cooking progresses, and it'll start with really fine bubbles. Mm-hmm. And then when it gets to the point, because the oil is very sticky and it's holding together very well, when it gets to the end point where you need to change, you'll see that those bubbles will turn into like, they'll just be huge bubbles. That's another thing that you can look for.
Yeah. When you talk about how to read a French fry, do you have a specific thing in mind?
Yeah. A French fry that's been fried in oil that's too fresh, when you look at the French fry, it'll be pale. It may not be cooked all the way through. As the oil breaks down a little bit, or breaks down is kind of a bad term because that sounds pejorative and it's not meant to be. As the oil matures, shall we say, and these chemical compounds form that allow the oil to cook more efficiently, then you'll see that the French fries will be golden. You know, the hallmarks of a great French fry, crisp on the outside, fluffy, steamed, moist on the inside, sharp edges. And there's also, there's just that great smell and flavor that comes from really good oil.
You have a lot of recipes in here. Do you have a favorite thing that you like to fry? Is there a recipe that you're especially fond of?
You know, especially at this time of year, I really love to fry zucchini flowers. And at the farmers markets here, they're hard to find in grocery stores, but look at farmers markets. And especially look at farmers markets that cater, this is a hot tip here, to Mexican populations, because they don't value the zucchini flower. I mean, that's a regular part of cooking in Mexico. And so if you go to a farmer's market, say that, you know, a yuppie market, you can pay $10 a pound for zucchini flowers. If you go to a Mexican market, they may be $1.50 or $2.
Wow.
And those are great. You can fry them. I usually use just a really simple, there's an Italian batter that's just water and flour. And it's a fairly thin batter so that you see the color of the flowers through it. I think that's really nice. Yeah. You can cook them just plain, or you can fill them. You know, open up the flour a little bit, put in a little bit, maybe a little bit of mozzarella with some garlic, maybe a little bit of goat cheese, something like that. Then dip it in the batter and then fry it. That's really delicious, and it cooks really quickly.
Mm, it does sound wonderful. I went to a restaurant recently that had what looked like spinach potato chips. And that surprised me. And I hadn't ever thought about frying spinach. It seems too delicate to do that, but it was delicious.
One of the things that's really popular now is frying herbs for chefs, because you get this kind of, especially with green herbs, you get these beautiful kind of jade green chips. They do that a lot with basil. And what that is when it comes right down to it, especially with thin pieces of food, frying is essentially dehydrating. It's driving off all of the moisture as quickly as possible. And so these chips are actually just kind of, it's very quickly dried herbs.
There was another recipe I came across in your book for what you call Tuscan potato chips that aren't Tuscan and aren't potato, but they are chips, I guess.
They're not even chips when you get right down to it. What it is a fresh pasta dough rolled out, cut into whatever shape you want, and then deep fried. And then you sprinkle them with some salt and some rosemary. Mm-hmm. And I had these the first time at a little restaurant in Liguria. And they were just, it was so simple, and they were so delicious. They're like, they're almost compulsively edible. I still swear that if I was a better businessman, I'd make my million with Tuscan potato chips.
Russ Parsons makes crisp French fries, perfect hard-boiled eggs, and tender pot roast in Los Angeles, California. He's the author of How to Read a French Fry and other intriguing tales of kitchen science.